The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, play the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes? There comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And welcome to The Essentials. I am your host, Hubert Edwards. And we're here to have ourselves a wonderful conversation this evening, as usual. You follow this show, you know that we are always discussing matters of, we're always discussing matters of international importance. We're looking at domestic issues. And certainly, we want you to join us and be a part of the conversation. We want you to be engaged in this conversation because we have some very, very, very important guests joining us. And these two individuals are all the way from across the pond, as we would say in street parlance. But before we get to that, I want to share with you the numbers are 323-6232. 325-4259, 325-4316, and our text line is 422-4796. And this evening, we are going to discuss, in broad sense, from an educational perspective. So yes, we're going to be discussing education, but more importantly, we're going to be looking at issues of governance. We're going to be looking at issues of executive leadership, public administration, educational administration. And we're very, very fortunate to have joining us all the way from Canada. And the first person I will introduce is from Canada via Jamaica, is no stranger to The Essentials. She has been on the show, been interviewed by myself. And we had great discussion at some point when she was at a particular point in her journey. Now that journey has come and she's back. Dr. Darcia Roach. She is originally from Jamaica. She is now working in Canada. She is supervised by our other guest, who is Professor Keith Walker. And she does her work in Department of Educational Administration. She's pursuing PhD in Educational Administration. She has a DBA, a Master or Doctor in Master of Administration. And I'm going to leave a little bit for her to kind of tell you in her own words. She has written a number of peer-reviewed articles and book chapters. And she's touching on the issue of transformational and transformative leadership. And we were also delighted, as I mentioned, Dr. Keith Walker. Very, very delighted to have him alongside Dr. Roach. He provides supervision on her educational journey. But this gentleman comes with great qualifications. Of course, he is a professor in the Department of Administration, Educational Administration, at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. I should probably mess that one up. But he's also a individual who is into executive leadership and organizational development. He's also a reverend, a pastor, and that is going to make for a very, very interesting conversation. He has sat on many, many boards. He has international presence in the field of academia and done work in about 15 different carve, hundreds of articles, and wrote maybe over 25 books. Dr. Roach and Dr. Walker, welcome to The Essentials.
Thank you, Hubert. It's just a real pleasure to be with you and Darcy on Guardian Radio today.
Yeah, it's certainly a pleasure to have you. Dr. Roach, welcome back. The last time you were here, you weren't Dr. Roach, in the at least not in the new discipline. So welcome and congratulations. You are on mute, Darcy, if you're trying to speak, so.
Okay, thank you, Hubert, for having me. And Professor Walker and Guardian Radio, it's a pleasure to be here with you this time. Thank you so much for the warm introduction.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure to have you, and it always gets me excited when I'm in the presence of brilliant people. This is the only time I feel like my brain is percolating when I have bright persons around me. I'm not as smart like you guys, but I try to keep up with the conversation today. And we have an international audience. Yes, you're listening here in the Bahamas, and our guests are out of Canada. And certainly we share our broadcast and our fellowship right throughout the Caribbean, Jamaica, more particularly. So we want to start where we must start. Darcia, give us a quick update on what has happened to you since the last time we spoke. You were on a particular educational journey. Where are you today?
Okay, thank you so much. And thanks for welcoming me back. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you. Well, the last time I was here, I was in the middle of the program that is completing the PhD in education at the University of Saskatchewan. Today, I can say, thank God, I have defended my paper last year. So I have completed the program with the help of my wonderful supervisor. I couldn't have done it alone. So as is now, I have completed the PhD in Educational Administration last year, December.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Dr. Roach is Dr. Roach, right? Yeah. And Dr. Walker, you're joining us for the first time. Let the people, the audience, hear a little bit about you in your own words. Who are you? What do you represent? What are the things which get you excited? What are the things that you're passionate about?
Well, I'll start closest to my heart, if I could, Hubert. I'm a Christ follower, and as you mentioned, a minister. I'm married to Viv. We have four adult kids, and we're relatively new grandparents. In fact, we're just over in the UK to see our two newest a month ago. So in some ways, that those things define me probably better than anything. I have been for over three decades a professor at the University of Saskatchewan in the province of Saskatchewan. It's the sort of triangular shaped province if you look at a big map in Midwest Canada. And prior to that, I was also a full-time pastor. Before that, I was a school teacher, and before that I was an international and Canadian level coach, swim coach in particular. So that's it in a nutshell, Hubert.
That's an interesting mix. So grandfather, swimmer, coach, past teacher, and a pastor. I want to start with you, Dr. Roach. One of the areas which you are focused on this new leg of your educational journey, and again, congratulations to you from all of us here. You have been looking at this idea of transformational and transformative leadership. And of course, because you are pursuing your educational endeavors and looking at educational administration, I would like to marry that, because I believe that the Bahamas, certainly, and the persons within the who are engaged and concerned with education could take some value from your experience, could take some value from the work that you have done in your dissertation, and could take some value in how we can bring, and you have a great educational experience of having taught at a number of schools in Jamaica specifically. But how do we bring this idea of transformational and transformative leadership with educational administration to make education that much more potent, effective for our region, for our countries?
Okay, thank you so much, Hubert, for asking that question. It's a very important question as it relates to how do we merge all of these leadership components into one to make education a bit effective or more transformative. It starts with the educational players in the industry or stakeholders in the industry. Starting with them in the sense that, of course, some guidance, some best practices, some strategies that we have to bring in it, because persons from the educational industry come to the fold with a lot of different commitment, different determination, different objectives, obligations, different mindset, different focus. How can we take all of these factors, components, and bring them into one factor to make the educational industry more transformative for each of us, whether we're in leadership position or whether we are in administrative teachers? How can we merge all of these factors for the educational industry to be productive or to be transformed, for it to be a win-win for all of us to be successful? A place where we want to go to work because we're motivated. So it's all about looking at the key factors that, for the want of a better word, make sense or can strategically place the educational industry or the educational arena on a pinnacle or on a hierarchy that all of us can benefit by extension, our society, the country.
Definitely very important. Dr. Your experience in academia, you have experience in coaching, and so you have obviously have worked with young or younger persons over a long time. But usually when you think about the educational arena, not everyone, and certainly in this side of the world, not as familiar with your part of the globe, but certainly in this side of the world, we do not readily in the public sector, for example, think about executive leadership and issues around organizational development and thinking about how you have applied ethics in the educational arena. So from where you sit, how do these things come together to help drive and forge a better offering within that arena, a better output, a more effective and productive type of an approach to educational endeavors, which benefits with whatsoever area that educational system serves?
Great question. It's a challenge. And, right off the bat, there aren't any formulas. Probably in some ways, anything I would say would just be who are in that sector and those who support the sector and those who benefit from the sector, which is all of us, and including the economies, including the nation building that we're wanting to do. We all probably have lots of the ingredients in our own minds. So if I would do anything, it would just be reminding us that we're living in a world full of challenges, full of chaos. And one of the things that we've come to understand that we can't control everything, and having a mindset that is more oriented towards the dance between chaos and order rather than trying to control, and believing that we have an order that provides both positional as well as influential leaders in our lives in all sectors, but in education, that's so fundamental. And we need to be, this is where the ethics piece of your question comes in. I remember years and years ago, Hubert, I was asked in our own province, there's a group of people, there were about 200 of them, that were the senior administrators in the province, and they had as their definition of leader, educational leadership, to manage and make change. And they came to me and said, we're not sure that that's, and I said, I agree with you, it's not. Because really, one of the fundamental starting points is to make sure that those leaders are grounded, that they're men and women full of integrity themselves, that they have worked out in their own core of character what it is to be a strong leader, someone who serves, someone who is there to make a difference, who with other people aspire to see boys and girls and men and women and from womb to tomb, lifelong, life-wide learning be the very best it can be. And for that to happen, there needs to be a commitment to some fundamental, but not to be taken for granted, ethical or anchoring moors. So that's the beginning of it. And what I'll say, just so I'm not talking too long here, is to say, not only do we need competence, and we could talk about all the details of that, but we need character. We not only need vision, but we need virtue. And that the starting place or the hinge of turning for all leaders, whether the leader is the only adult in the classroom, that teacher, a leader, whether it's the parent at home, whether it's the grandparent supporting their families, whether it's legislators, whether it's public servants, whether it's the people who live across from the school. Everyone, I think, needs to really see and be grounded in the view that character counts, that it's very, very important that we take our stand in terms of what might be called universal ethical principles and expect behavior that's that way oriented. Maybe I'll just stop there.
Yeah, and so you're effectively arguing for all individuals, all participants, all players to kind of see their role, their contribution in the whole educational process, regardless of where they stand, through a leadership lens. So rather than say, I am the parent, I am the individual who lives next door, I am the administrator, or I'm a part of the municipal leadership, when it comes to the whole educational process, you recognize that you are part and parcel of the overall leadership machinery, the leadership framework, which is the, whoever it is, whether, as you say, from womb to tomb. So we can't say young people anymore, but to deliver the quality type of educational output to the management at the institutional level to all of the persons who are the customers of these systems.
Hubert, that was brilliantly expressing and understanding what I was trying to say. Thank you for that. And I think I want to just extend to another group we often don't think about. We need to think about our children in school, our youth in school, our young people that are in other post-secondary and apprenticeship programs. We need to look at them as leaders as well, developing leaders. We're all developing. I mean, one of the things that leaders need to realize that, at least in my tradition, grace, that ability to be charismatic, to do a good job of influencing other people, it begins with humility. And I think sometimes looking at the young people is a way of getting to that. But those young people, we need to look at them as people we're developing into the leaders of the future. and the followers. And if we understand that leadership isn't, it's the leader and the follower. That leadership is the hyphen. In other words, we want to create conditions where people exchange the role of being leaders, whether they're grade six child, or whether they're a longstanding teacher, or whether they're looking after an educational system, or whether they're a minister of education for a state. Every single person has a role of both followership and leadership in the work that we all do together. And that's part of what it is to be citizen.
Definitely. Dr. Roach, just piggybacking from the discussion or the points just made by Dr. Walker, Professor Walker, looking at your resume, your bio, you have this very interesting, eclectic, if you will, combination of institutions that you have had, I guess, the privilege or the pleasure of participating with. So you were at the university level, University College of the Caribbean, the Management Institute for National Development, the Heart Trust Image is more of a practical, technical type institution. Tell us how all of this come together from the perspective or through the lens that you have now acquired. How can the country, Jamaica, the Bahamas, leverage these institutions or these types of institutions more effectively for growth? First, growth in the educational arena, and then also looking at it possibly from an economic perspective.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for asking that that question. Excellent, excellent question. And yes, I have worked in the educational fraternity in Jamaica, and I have dabbled a little in it in Canada recently. But what I realized, and Professor Walker spoke to it, that whole transformational aspect of it, because what I realized being in the educational industry, we have to, from a transformational point of view, we have to model the way for others. We have to encourage the heart. Because what I found out, and this is my personal experience, what I found out working in the educational industry, there are learners who came or who have been to class with so many different focuses. They don't really come as such to learn right there and then in the space, some of them, right? What I would have realized is that before you get to the core of it, as it relates to teaching and learning, you have to do some motivation. And that's where the psychology comes in. You have to do a little motivation. You have to motivate, encourage them based on what they're going through prior to getting the mind there to learn. So we have to model the way for them to follow. We have to encourage the heart, right? We have to show them to what extent they have a part to play in inspiring the shared vision, right? Because their input in the vision and the mission of the institution is very, very critical, because it can't be realized or achieved without them. Encourage others to act, right? The whole transformative approach, when Professor Walker spoke about it, how is it we encourage others? How is it we involve them in the decision-making process? Because that is also critical. So the whole challenging the process as a transformational leader in the educational industry, it's very, 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 very important. And that's what I found out based on my years of experience in it. Because others will come to you and say, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. How do I deal with this, right? You have to encourage them. Encourage the heart. Model the way for them to follow, because sometimes they observe you, they observe what you've done, what you're doing without saying anything. And that is what actually stimulates the mind or their minds to work, right? So that is my takeaway from being there, the whole importance of challenging the process, right? Sometimes as leaders, we have to challenge the process, right? We have to call on the relevant ministries to support or to give the buy-in where necessary for value to be added to the to institutions.
And Professor Walker, as we kind of take that perspective, because I want us to, you know, what I'm trying to do here is kind of lay some foundation and build block on block to get to a particular point. So as Dr. Roach laid out this idea of, you know, shared vision, we have to make sure that the persons within the institution understand where it is that we're doing, how we are going to get there. I just want to leapfrog that thinking to the national level. How do we create a linkage between the shared vision of a country or a particular community, a state? How do we link that shared vision between national or economic objective and the educational underpinning, the educational support, which is going to help to drive that into the future?
Yeah, and what a challenge, Hubert. That and it's becoming more and more difficult, especially with in all of our nations, with the breakdown of social contract and even some of the homogeneity or the sameness, you know, as we become more and more diverse. And which is, by the way, just such a beautiful thing, but it's you know, it certainly has its challenges. I do think that what Darcy has said, in a, just the simple answer would be, we need to multiply what she's been talking about and just get more of it. Mm-hmm. So you know, where do you begin? And I think what saying, well, that's all great, but where do I start? Well, start, you know, with your own family, start in your own neighborhood, start in your own school or your institution, start in your workplace. And I've learned so much from Dr. Roach in this, and in one of the things that she's become very expert in is the notion of a psychological contract, or you might even call it a promise, a mutual promising amongst people, where you work with your grandchildren, your children, your adult children, your coworkers, to not be tribespeople, you know, that kind of distinguish themselves from others, and not be, pardon the language, it's an old Greek word, idiots, who kind of just do their own thing and don't care about anybody else, but to be citizens where we have discourse or conversations, dialogue, die is two, log is truth, where there's two truths and we kind of work things out and we develop what Darcy would call psychological contracts that then aggregate and become social contracts where we begin to agree together on the higher goods, those things that are most important to us, the greatest goods. What can we agree to? Let me just use an example, use a national example of well-being. I have a student who's just getting ready to defend her dissertation where she has studied, and this is in your area of expertise, Hubert, it's budgets, state budgets. And in her case, New Zealand's effort to have a higher value, the higher value is well-being. And so every department, every unit, every budget had to represent how the national well-being, the disaggregated individual well-being and the collective well-being of the nation, it's a small nation, island nation, not unlike some of the ones that your listeners are from, they filtered it through the notion, and this has been well documented now, of the notion of well-being. It's a higher value. And so we need these superordinate values or these meta values that we can all agree to. Sometimes they're compacts or charters or commitments that go beyond our diversity. And sometimes they're a chartered understanding of values that are beyond our individual differences. So I think that's the key. And I think the brokers of those things are leaders of leaders. And those need to be raised up. And where they do exist and they're in place, they need to be encouraged to be courageous to the fulfillment of seeing some of those higher ground aspirations being?
So we're looking at some idealistic outlook, inspirational, transformational movement. We're seeking to embrace ideals which kind of transcend our diversity, as you indicated. It transcended in such a way that it creates the glue that, so while we're becoming more and more diverse, represents a true north, if you will, that all of us can look to. Isn't it therefore important, Dr. Walker, that we start to see greater congruence between governance at the national level or at the governmental level and the corporate governance at the educational level? How isn't it important if we're going to strive through the educational system to deliver those ideas that there has to become a meeting of the two disciplines, governance, which is at the national or state level, and certainly corporate governance, which is at the organizational level?
Yeah, that's just very well stated. Thank you, Hubert. Whether it's called trans-organizational or trans-sector governance, where we really begin to understand, you know, whether it's like a mixing bowl where you've got multiple levels and there are higher levels and under them other levels, they need to be attuned and aligned to each other. But where there are parallel structures, there needs to be conversations for how that might happen. I want to go back to one of your other points, because I think you're absolutely right to frame what Dr. Roach and I are talking about as ideals. And really what we're talking about here is public philosophy, mm-hmm. and or political studies. And historically, that conversation is about idealism, realism, and reform. So all my students, for three decades, have always read Machiavelli's The Prince, which is all about how kind of almost the underside of these things, the toxic, the hard part, the grit and grime part. And that's a reality, Hubert, isn't it? And, corruption, lack of transparency, all of those kinds of things are problematic. On the other hand, you've got the idealists. And I think, you know, all the spirit of renewal and reform and of restructuring, and part of that restructuring is partly in what you have foreshadowed as a need. And that's about talking across organizations, across governance systems, so we're speaking in one language and with the same higher goals.
And that is really, I think, almost perfect way of framing it. Recognizing that there is the idealistic stance, but also being humble enough to understand that realism must be injected and infused in whatsoever fervor you may have for idealistic drive. And being even more humble, if that is possible, to understand that in all of the process, there are going to be some inherited systems, some legacy systems, some realities that exist today that requires reform in order for us to start to close the circle on that type of realism that we desire. And so, as you indicated, Professor Walker, it's hard work. It's higher level thinking, but there's also some grit and grind which needs to take place in the background. And usually this is where the challenges come up. This is where the obstacles meet, because the reforms which are needed are not always easy. They represent, in many instances, friction. They represent decision choices, priorities, and they also represent trade-offs And consequently, depending on our outlook, depending on what it is that we desire, depending on what it is which we believe make our tribe, whether the tribe is going to be the educational group or the tribe is going to be the political group or the tribe is just going to be different segments within the community. Depending on what we think is a win for our tribe, we usually drive and make the changes in that direction. Oftentimes, there are soft changes and the changes are suboptimal, and therefore they kind of derogate from the overall idealism that we seek to achieve. We have two very, very, very well-qualified educators with us this evening on the essentials, Dr. Keith Walker and Dr. Darcy Arole, and we're having this conversation, a bit of a mishmash in a way, but we're going someplace with this. It's about leadership. It's about administrative and in administrative leadership in the educational arena. It's about how we tie in education as an underpinning towards it's about governance. So we are going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to get right back into that conversation. We're going to look at how do we tackle the underbelly? How do we look at the Machiavelli? How do we look at the reform? How do we look at the things which are necessary to enable us to get to the place where we can drive and strive for the ideal of creating a better educational system, better run organization, and also ultimately better run countries? This is The Essentials. Don't move. I'm right back.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
When faced with another, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at last.
And welcome back to The Essentials as we listen to Jim McCliff singing in the background. Dr. Darcy Arole, that one for you. Certainly, you know, you can get it if you really want. All you have to do is to keep trying. And this is really what this conversation is about. As persons within the academic field, I'm certainly sitting with two well-qualified and distinguished individuals. And having a little bit have interacted with persons over time, you get the impression that persons within academia understands the value of starting conversation, the value of taking disparate views, putting it in the same space, and seeking to encourage and nurture that in such a way that at the end of the day, you fine-tune and you come out on the other side with better ideas. So, Dr. Roach, as you look at the work that you've been doing, building on your dissertation, this idea of taking self-determination theory, looking at educational leadership and the teacher's perception on success, and marrying that or infusing that with the psychological contract, which Professor Walker mentioned earlier. What is it that you're seeking to drive? What is it? What type of a new thinking, if there's anything new under the sun, but what is it that you're trying to bring the spotlight to? Self-determination, self-determination theory, psychological contract, and infusing that into the whole educational leadership and success perception.
Okay, thank you for asking that. Okay, the self-determination theory, it basically refers ability to make choices and manage their own lives, right? So it's being self-determined. And being self-determined means that you control how you feel, right? So self-determination theory suggests that all humans have basic needs. They have a need to be competent, to be related, the whole relatedness, autonomy, and efficacy, right? So those are some components of the whole self-determination theory. As individuals, we have the ability to make choices, but of course we want help at times in making those choices. The psychological contract, on the other hand, it refers to the employer and the employee's relationship, the beliefs about mutual obligations, the values, the expectations, what the employees are expected to give and what they will in return get from the employer, right? When the needs are met or when needs are satisfied. So it's like a reciprocal approach to what is it the employers will get and what is it the employee will get. Mm-hmm. Critical to that is that, of course, it can be mutually satisfactory or satisfying, or it cannot be. So we have to look at the our capacity to contract, and we have to look at the opportunity cost. What is it that I'm giving up as the employee to the employer, and what is it that the employer is giving me, right? I don't have to accept, it's my decision. It can be less in value, or it can be more in value that one gives up, right? As it relates to the two components. From an educational point of view, educational leaders, I'm gonna say, have to or should realize, those who don't realize, that as an individual, a worker, a teacher, while I have the competence or while the teachers have the competence to perform the job, there are times when they need a little autonomy in order to help them to be effective at what they do, right? Yes, they have the contract in place, and yes, they're guided by the conditions of the contract based on the psychological contract. But there's also a need for the leader in the education to actually play a part in personality and the whole change in the system, right? Sometimes there might be a need for motivation. Sometimes there might be a need for training, for development, to be involved in decision making. These might be some needs that are needed in the whole transformational reform in the educational system. So is leaders or the leaders, in a sense, have to marry what is it that they are giving up to employee and what is it the employee are giving up to the employer, and basically help both of them to achieve the goal, the mission, the vision of the organization, right? Because we would have known that leadership or leading is also connected to learning.
And that is so well put. And I think you have catapulted us right into where I would like to take this conversation with Professor Walker. Employee in general instance, let's use teachers, the principals, the administrators, the ancillary staff, and so on. let's use those persons will represent the employee. And then let's use government as an entity, usually in this side of the world through the Ministry of Education, as the employer. How do you, Dr. Professor Walker, taking your experience from a governance perspective, but more importantly, the educational, from your experience within the educational arena and public administration, so you're marrying the two now, how would you advise, how would you coach, how would you guide a government, a ministry, in taking the points just made by Dr. Roach? How do we get to the place where we find congruence, where we can able to have that type of interaction between employee and employer as a means of creating a platform for transformation, for fixing the system, for bringing in some instances, certainly right here in the Bahamas and certainly in other areas of the Caribbean, bringing the educational thrust to the 22nd century?
Yeah. Again, it's certainly a challenge and an ongoing work in progress. And I know that there have been in your region so many different efforts and initiatives to work on just that. Maybe in different words, but with that, one of the complications implicit in what you're asking is what is sometimes referred to as a tri-level system, you know, where you have just if we imagine the ministry as being one level, the government, the public administration, both elected people making decisions and creating regime values that move the purposes and the interests of the people forward. You've got the bureaucrats that operationalize that as the executives of ministries, and then they're working depending on the system, either directly with schools or with parishes with multiple schools and so on. So you've got different systems. And then you've got the actual school level, classroom level operation, where you've got that one teacher, others who are working together with the administration of that school to make things happen. And getting connections there and empowerment there. Here's what we know from research in English-speaking countries. I don't know about non-English-speaking countries, but across the world, this is what they have found, that what leaders can do at all three of those levels, whether it be a school principal, whether it's a regional director, and Ministry of Education personnel, elected or bureaucrat, is they can help create capacities. And capacities are built by encouragement, by providing resources for development, by adequately funding, and obviously with that, stewarding and having accounting, as well as both pressures and supports for the educational initiatives, but particularly looking at the development of teachers. More and more, those English-speaking countries are working on the development of parents to do their part, so they're not just giving everything over to the state or to private systems to look after their children, but they're taking all they can do in terms of their own engagement and making space for that at all of those levels where you get an equipping culture, absolutely essential in that tri-level work. The second thing in the findings is that create excellent working conditions for students, for staff personnel. We actually, as leaders, don't have a direct impact on learning outcomes, but we have a facilitative, sometimes antecedent or beforehand kind of influence that we can have on outcomes by providing the capacities, the working conditions, and also the climate and the attention to the very importance, I think the sacred importance, of educational systems that are both robust and also that take into account the changing environment and the changing needs of both the economy, but also of people, so that there's a sort of a resilience, you might say, in the system. In other words, I think sometimes education systems are really built very bureaucratically in the word, and not necessarily sensitive to what's going on the ground, remembering again that it's a tri-level piece, and that assuming that everybody's the same and seeing that the biggest value is uniformity rather than dispersing some of that responsibility, contracting with people to get that work done at the local level, using the principle of subsidiarity, which basically says the people on the ground probably know best what to do, and empowering them to do that, providing the working conditions, providing the capacities through resources and initiative, and bringing attention to the absolutely crucial and to be honored work of educators. And this goes into other sectors. This is true in health. This is true in social services. This is true in corrections. This is true in policing. This is true in every sector of our human service professions. We've got to be encouraging. Encouragement and courage. So putting courage into people. And we do that inexpensively. 95% of encouragement comes by good words, by recognizing good, being good finders. So if I'm a parent, I need to be a good finder when I'm looking at that teacher working with my child. If I'm a minister of education, I need to be a good finder. I also have to be a problem solver, but start with the good finding.
And I think the way you outline that is so important, because too often in this side of the world, certainly here in the Bahamas, our experience, our interaction, the moments of great fame, the 15 minutes of fame for teachers, is usually when things are going wrong. It's usually when the union raises its head because there is a significant challenge. There is we get to a point where the administration, in terms of teachers' rights and looking out for their work condition, starts to butt head with the government. And so if we get to the place, as you put it, where we orient our thinking to become good finders, it's about positive thinking, it's about looking good, and speak to that, rather than find ourselves in circumstances where when the conversations do happen, when they actually spill over in the public, we are really talking past each other and we are saying bad things about each other. How can we get to that place of encouraging, of moving the psyche, of understanding that education is facilitative, as you indicated, Professor? It's facilitative. It's designed to create influence for learning, not necessarily because, unless you're a surgeon, you can cut people ahead and just download everything in there. It has to become facilitative. And we have to get to the place where Dr. Roll mentioned earlier, that we are building capacities which are going to cause us to develop better learning cultures. And so we want to kind of shift just slightly and ask you, before I go back to Dr. Root, how do we get to this place where we have more effective equipping culture? And before you answer that, I want to throw this out to you. It's something which I say very often. The greatest strategy, the best strategy, the most perfect strategy in the world is going to be undermined by an ineffective culture. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, you're right. Our cliche, and you might have it as well, Hubert, is that culture eats strategy for breakfast.
In other words,
unless you've got a learning culture. And so there's lots of research, but just to be plain about this, it's the move from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. Now, I'm quite simple in the way I think about this. Learning is growth. Actually, pain is sometimes growth and learning. Learning is transformation. Like, these things all mean very similar things to me. And I think part of having a learning culture, and we spent many, many years going into different school settings and different systems and asking the question, how are they learning? And how are they especially learning about their learning? We sometimes call that double loop learning, where they're learning from their past experiences and taking that learning into the next experience. And, you know, part of that is just talking about it out loud and sharing those with other people. We learn so much informally. And one of the things that I think we understand is that sometimes we're not asking the right people. I mean, the ones that are right on the front lines, you know, they have a pretty good idea of what would work, and giving them, you know, there's an old saying that administration is making space for truth and caring. And so it's to serve the people, or to use the word that's been used already, facilitate so that people can learn and actually, you know, asking a parent that comes in, if you're you learning about your child and what you're learning, then I can learn from you. Parents asking the teacher, what can I learn from you about my child? Asking the child, how do you learn best? And what are you learning? And what would you like to learn about? Asking the Minister of Education in our particular countries, what do you need to learn in order to be able to provide quality assurance for the people of this state, this country, with respect to the quality of learning that's taking place? What do you need to know, and how can we get you that information? And then by giving you that information, implied in that is that you'll provide support for those things that aren't working that need to, and reward those things that are. And so, you know, there are lots of different ways of going about this, but certainly beginning with the people around us and then trying to multiply that out to others. This is where the organizational and governance piece moves in. And Hubert, I just really appreciate your underlining the notion of humility. In my tradition, we say God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. And I think here's another example. I'm not sure how in your region they talk about this at all, but yesterday was the 14th of March. It's sometimes called the Ides of March. And you probably heard the saying, beware the Ides of March. And it really entails remembering Julius Caesar in ancient days was lured into a particular square, and his Confederates had daggers and they killed him. And I'm not laughing at his being killed. I'm just laughing at the fact that we sometimes make light of that ourselves and don't realize that sometimes we are, as we've been saying, are just looking for what's wrong with things. And if we could start paying attention to what works, this is a fundamental learning theory, both individual learning and collective learning theory. As a person thinks, so they are. So we need to start thinking positively. We need to have some more positivity. We need to be noticing things that are going well. And then we need to nurture those things. Mm-hmm. And then we need to figure out how to bring some sustaining to those things or foster those things by making space or facilitating more of those things. Now, we know that you get more of what you give attention to. That's another basic learning theory. So we do need to, having a child, teaching them how to play football. We call it soccer sometimes over here. You don't tell them with their foot not to miss the ball. You tell them to keep their eyes on the ball. Mm-hmm. And we need to keep our eye on the ball. We need to pay attention to what's working and just look to get more of it and more of it and more of it. And as that happens, and as we learn what's working, asking the question, what's working, and how can we get more of it? Then we begin to see the learning culture develop that you're talking about. That's how we learn as individuals. I've got a 2.5-year-old grandchild. The reason that she's walking right now is she's decided that falling isn't as good as walking. And we
that's a powerful way to put it.
Walking.
Yeah. It's so visually that just pops out at me because you think of a child, first of all, can't move, then crawling, and then get into the place where, yes, I can now stand up, but I am doing more falling than walking. And then you get to the point where you actually embrace the idea that walking is a good thing, and that's where the focus is going to be. To Shifa, Dr. Professor, you are on mute. If you were saying anything, you muted yourself. But let's shift very quickly back to Dr. Roach. And Dr. Roach, I'm sure that you are very delighted to see us discussing your dissertation without even mentioning the fact that you have a dissertation. I mean, naturally, because you're a Dr. Persons would know that you did. But pretty much everything that we have discussed here up to now is about your dissertation without mentioning it. So I think this is the appropriate point for you to kind of zero in on that and use this moment to kind of stitch the things that we've been talking about and bring that back to the central point being the study you have engaged in and the basis on which you want to contribute to the collective knowledge as it relates to the educational process, the administrating of education, and certainly as a Jamaican national, as a woman from the Caribbean region, we are anticipating that these learnings that you are garnering over there in Canada, at some point in time, you're going to take them back to the region because we need this type of a help. We need this type of a support. We need this type of a thinking. Talk to us.
Okay. And thank you so much for that important information, Herbert. And you're correct. I have been enjoying the interview so far. But that, Professor Walker, and you also alluded to it, the whole cultural relates to the culture, the different cultures in organization and how can they be improved and in order to make the education system a better one for all of us. Came out in my dissertation or in my research was the whole paradigms sometimes that critical in some organizations to be shifted, because the whole paradigm as it relates to the power structures, the organizational structures and the control systems in some organizations came out as being problematic. So my research was conducted with participants from Canada and in Jamaica. What I would have realized that the problems experienced by in the educational industry in Canada is totally different from those that would have been experienced by educational leaders and teachers in Jamaica. For example, we spoke about the power struggle. It came out in my research to an extent where sometimes leaders need to let go, for the want of a better word. Not that they're going to give up control or give up their autonomy or give up their authority, but sometimes they need to let go a bit of the too much power that they have, the basis of power that they have there, and actually flesh it a little to see what would have been or what could have been, because the structure of some of these organizations, especially in Jamaica, based on my research, would have prevented growth, would have prevented growth, motivation of some of these educational players or teachers, for the want of a better word, in the organization. Of course, the need to change or the need for change, critically also in the educational industry. And of course, that came out in my study. And we would have known about several change management theories. We know about the Lowen's change management theories, where he spoke about the unfreezing, the change, and the refreezing, right? Sometimes we have to prepare for the desired change, right? As leaders, we have to do that. But at the same time, we have to prepare others for the change. And I remember I had an interview with an educational leader in Canada, and that actually came out how she did it beautifully as it relates to not only preparing herself for the change, her administration for the change, and together they work, and it was a success as it relates to the change. So we have to unfreeze, we have to change sometimes, right? Realize that there's need for desired change. And of course, we have to refreeze. We have to refreeze, and that is critical and important in the educational industry. Mackenzie also spoke a little about change as it relates to his model. He spoke about the strategy. Sometimes we have to change the strategy. Sometimes we have to change the structure. Sometimes the system has to be changed. Our whole style of leadership or skills, shared value, these have to change in order to make the system a better place for all of us. And my findings also spoke to the fact that there's need for respect, there's need for motivation, there's need for guidance, there's a need to build a relationship for success in the organizations, right? Succession planning.
At what levels though? Are these intra-organizational or between the educational fraternity and government fraternity and the citizens, the residents? Where is this connection of respect required?
And it requires in all the aspects, so to speak, because some of the and this is mainly in the Jamaican sector, the Jamaican educational system.
and that's fine, because that translates well. I think we certainly here in the Bahamas we can draw great information, because I'm sure that there are great level of similarities between what happened in Jamaica and the Bahamas. So we definitely want to hear about that. But what I wanted to kind of push you to is to understand, where are these respect points needed?
Yeah, the respect points are needed from the Ministry of Education to the educational leaders in the institutions, or at these various institutions. And that came out fully in the study. And also, to some extent, from the educational leaders who are in the system to the teachers who are actually lower on the hierarchy. That came out in the study as a point of concern.
So you are saying, and I have a question I want to ask about the bridging, because in our, certainly the Bahamas, there are persons who fall in between the government in its most purest form and the schools. So you have whether these are education officers, persons who run districts, and they are the individuals who operationalize the overall government strategy, who translate what they consider to be the vision, and who may have certainly a significant amount of influence in moving the message from government to school and from school back to government. And in that translation process, if they were to get that wrong, if they were to misinterpret what is happening there, could create significant challenges. Or they could, once they have it properly defined, properly communicated, they could also create the opportunity for a very virtuous circumstance, couldn't it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, they could have, and hence the need for the change paradigm that is needed, and hence the need for that collaboration and mentorship that was spoke about. That whole communication skills, how are things communicated, the effectiveness of the communication. So I do agree with you that yes, they have to get it right, because if not, then that can be detrimental to the whole educational system.
Yes. And so before we get into our final break, I just want to ask Professor Walker, if you back with us and you can unmute, how do we get to the place where we start to influence based on the work which Dr. Roach would have done, or experience looking at the Jamaican system and then comparing that to things out of Canada, the freeze, do the work, will unfreeze, do the work, and then refreeze? How do we take the culture which may not be serving us at the optimal level, unfreeze that, retweak it, and get it back on a track where we can now start to be served better, and in the whole process, plug in all of the important stakeholders from government at the top down to the lowly, but certainly parent or the individual within the community as part and parcel of being an active player in the educational system?
Sure. Great points that have raised here. First of all, the why needs to be altogether clear, and there needs to be a solidarity in terms of the cause and the drivers here. That's absolutely crucial. How usually follows, and it's where we often get tripped up. Let me say a few things. I'll try to be brief here. We need to probably consider some axioms or some basic principles. Number one, you can't mandate what matters. And in a centralized system of education, social services, health, whatever, there needs to be a real awareness from a system change perspective that both second level or tinkering, as well as what's called the major change, can't be mandated in a way that really communicates values. There's too many gaps there. Secondly, top-down doesn't work, which is related to the first point, and bottom-up doesn't work. You need both. You need both. So start. Here's something we haven't talked about, Hubert, and that is system trust. How do we develop relational and collaborative and coordinative and cooperative trust systems? It's my view that accountability systems or mandates are very often substitutes for trust. And so there needs to be an interdependence that grows as a result of earned trust and the opportunity to demonstrate trustworthiness at the personal level, at the organizational level, at the body level or the institutional level, and in the whole system. And I think one of the things that we need for that will be obviously discernment, negotiation, discretion, an understanding of the various risks. Obviously, the Minister of Education sees vulnerabilities politically, particularly. That person's bureaucrats see vulnerabilities of all sorts. And I know, Hubert, this is one of your areas of real expertise. Being able to listen to the interests and the demands under alliance structures are needed. There's an old idea, it's 50 years old, but the whole notion of mediating structures. What do we need is structures that actually will help these entities talk to one another? Do we actually have the mechanisms for conversation, for dialogue, for interacting, for joint work together on some of these pieces here? And that has to do with our, and nowadays we have so many tools available to us, and then moving into more of an appreciative approach as opposed to a deficit approach Those are just a few thoughts that I have, and I know you've got a break coming up.
Definitely, and that is a really such a good way to wrap it up. This one conversation is absolutely not going to do it. And so even before we get to the end, I just have to throw the invitation door wide open, because I think there are other areas which we need to explore. Because after all, the way I look at it, when we have individuals with the brilliance of Dr. Roach, who takes work and move all the way into North America, having lived in the Caribbean, we have to figure out a way of creating and making that dotted line, backing that dotted line back to Jamaica, back to the Bahamas, so that they can be helped. And there are other individuals. As I speak, I can think about a former teacher of mine, Ms. Gooden Monteith, Ms. Charmian Monteith, who is also working in this arena. And we have to now start to figure at a different level, thinking higher, as was said earlier, as to how we can create a space to drive our educational system. And there are plenty of good things happening. That's not what I'm trying to say here. I'm not going on a negative trend. There are many, many great things happening. Brilliant students here in Jamaica, in the Bahamas, out of Jamaica, out of Barbados, out of Trinidad and Tobago. But we do recognize that there are systems and there are cultures and there are things which we can work on. And if we, through this program, if we, through this platform, can shine a light on that and create a path for a thinking, then certainly that is what we want to do. Professor Walker mentioned earlier that we have to focus on thinking. And it reminds me of something that I wrote, and I don't intend to confuse anyone as we go into the break. So I'll read it for you. I think it paves the path for my thinking, so I may think in ways that improves my thinking, such that my thinking becomes a superior way of thinking, I think. You're listening to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
Where years have gone, still the Son of Man keeps a trotting on.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together. And we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions. Dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau.
I'm not settling, so many did before me. I'm not settling, yeah. Oh, I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no contest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no contest. So many people want the status quo. Why they settle, I don't know. So many options, so many choices, but so
yes,
many
we have so many options, so many choices. There's absolutely no way we can settle for the status quo. And that is what this conversation is about. We want to start a conversation. We want to build on that conversation. And we want to get to the place where persons are understanding, appreciating the fact that regardless of how good it is, it can be better. And certainly in the areas where it is not perfect, where it's not at the ideal, we can make it better. And conversations like these, the willingness of individuals with great experience, great insight to come and join us. And we also have to take it to a different level where we have to build on the relationships and ensure that we can use it to benefit our country, our region, and certainly our world. As we get into the final moments of this show, Dr. Ruth, I just want to, I'm not going to ask you a question. I just want you to throw it out there. You are a woman from the Caribbean. You understand what the Caribbean is about. You understand what the Caribbean system is. You're now over in Canada and experiencing from a different perspective. What are some of the things which play with your mind in your quiet moments as you seek to get your rest, those things that bother you, those things that you would love to be able to take to the region and fix, even as you work to make Canada that much better?
That's an excellent question. And thank you so much for asking. Canada, I've been here since 2017, as I stated earlier, pursuing the doctorate in educational administration. Thank God I have completed it with the help of my supervisor. His professional guidance, his knowledge, and his understanding. I was blessed to have him as my supervisor. I remember one time we had a conversation and I said to him, "Sir, I'm happy that you're my supervisor." And he said to me, "Oh, Dorothy, let me tell you how it goes. You did not choose me. I chose you." And I was so happy because I think that was a divine intervention, having him as my supervisor. Canada is a beautiful, and I can only speak from my experience. It's a beautiful place. The people are very respectful. They are loving. They are kind. They are helpful. Not that the Jamaicans aren't, but being in Canada has actually changed my whole life experience, my focus as it relates to how I go about doing things. Canada has a way, an easy way for you to learn. I'm going to research that later. It's an easy way for you to learn. It's not forceful, it's not pressuring, but you have to learn and you will learn. I remember when I did the first doctorate, I said to someone, "It is nothing compared to this one that I've done in Canada." Because some of the things I actually, like for example, data I use in Envivo, I didn't know how to do that. I actually had to pay someone in America to do that. Being in Canada, they provide all, at the university, they provide all the resources for me to learn. And I actually was able to analyze my data myself because of the facilities, the information, the assistance, the guidance that was given to me. The educational system is very, very dynamic. I am from a business background, but when I came to Canada, of course, I actually love the whole education system here. There are so many strategies that the Jamaican, I'm going to say Ministry of Education or the Jamaican Educational Fraternity could basically adapt from the Canadian Canadian system, and that would have to be like a next time discussion. But it has been good. Learning is good. Learning is great. Of course, if you want to learn any at all, you will learn. You have the guidance. You have all the resources. You have all the support. Come here to do well, because the facilities, the systems are in place too in Canada. The educational system. Systems are in place for us to thrive and for us to flourish, right? That also, I think, would need to be adapted in the whole Jamaican educational system, because there's a lack of system, of course, and there's a lack of resources. But as I said, it has been the best decision I've ever made in my life, coming here to study and to garner knowledge. They actually exposed me a lot as it relates to doing research, going to conferences, meeting with educational players in the industry, hearing from their stories. So it actually builds me. I have grown tremendously being here in Canada and studying at the University of Saskatchewan. Excellent university. I wouldn't have had it any way better. This is the best charter or the best chapter of my life, being here and having this degree.
That's so great to know. And we are asking you to be the sponge that you are and suck up all of that good thing over there, because sooner or later, we're not telling you to come back. We can't make that decision for you, but certainly we want you to be able to infuse, to reconnect, to plug in. And if we can play a role here on the essentials, we certainly will do that. Professor Keith, you have almost the last say. Obviously, as the host, I must have the absolute last say. But the last couple of minutes, you have 2 minutes or so. What would be your closing views?
Hubert, I want to just thank you for this interview. You know, you've reminded me, I'm just going to tell a story just to end off here. You may have heard of a leadership author by the name of John Maxwell.
Yes, I do.
He has written more and sold more leadership books than any other living person. But I had in my career some one-on-one with him. And I asked him, John, how did you get your education? How did you learn? And how have you been so successful in developing learning cultures and making decisions and advising people, head of states, right through to people like me? How have you done that? And he says, well, someone one day gave me $1,000 as a gift. And I thought, what will I do with this? Will I go to school? What will I do with this? And he said, I decided to name, at this time, in fact, where I was asking him this question when we were out for lunch on a Sunday afternoon, he said, I named, he was in the San Diego area, who I respected highly as leaders. And I called up their secretaries and I asked them if I could have a half hour of their time and I'd pay them $100 for it. And he said, I did that. One of the people I remember him mentioning was Peter Drucker, just as an example. Well, I took that on as the way that I would start learning. And I want to encourage all of your listeners, whether they're grandparents, whether they're Minister of Education, to be able to ask questions like Hubert asked questions, and then integrate those in terms of our own understanding and just say, now that's a great education. Now, look, Hubert, I've got this perfect job. I get people like Darcia, Dr. Roach coming in and spending time with me, and she asks me questions and she shares her knowledge. And I've got dozens of people to do that with me every day. I just live such a gifted life to be able to do that. But I think part of it is every single listener can do that same thing for themselves. Take on a Hubert approach to interviewing and it just in conversation, asking people what works for them. And how can we together make education and whatever sector we're working in better? I'll just leave it at that.
I thank you to have you here, to have Dr. Roach here. Of course, she is a returnee, and sooner or later, you are going to return to. But this was an important conversation. I deliberately took it the way that I did without starting with the dissertation, so that persons can understand that there is thinking, there is reasoning, there is a foundation behind what we do. And when we bring great minds together, when we start conversation in a particular direction, we can have effective output. At the end of the day, what I would love to do is to use this platform, and have been using this platform, as a basis of educating, of opening persons' eye, of inspiring, and trying to say that there is better to come. Dr. Keith, Professor Keith Walker put it, very, very well when he said, look, we have to become lookers of good things. We have to be good finders. Find the good things within us. Find the good things within you. Find the good things within your neighbor. Find the good things within the country, within the school, within the educational system. And if we can do that, then eventually we will get to the place where all of a sudden the psyche of the country nationally changes. The psyche of the region changes, place where we are able to do even greater things. We are clean out of time and just want to thank my two guests. As we usually end the show, we always say, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that is left to say, therefore, is take care of yourself, be good, walk good, one love and Ubuntu night.